Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code WEALTH. That's monarch.com, promo code WEALTH.
Several contenders started out on a contest of a lifetime, all vying to take the top prize.
Good morning, citizens of Ireland.
Well, look, the truth is, I'm happy to take a nomination from anybody who's willing to give it to me.
I've been considering it over the last few months. People have been suggesting, crazily enough.
Alliances were tested, ambitions dashed as the fallen exited the race.
I think mathematically that's it now for me.
My naivety on the political spectrum and on the campaign spectrum, that's where I fall down.
That's over 16 years ago. It was It was a very, very stressful time for myself and my family.
Leaving just two hopefuls to battle it out, but only one will survive the vote of the nation. This is Calling It, the presidential election.
Calling It with Ivan Yates and Sean Defoe,
a News Talk original podcast.
He mightn't be Claudia Winkleman, he mightn't even be Siobhan McSweeney, but we dusted off Ivan Yates, which can only mean one thing: it's game on.
Thought you were going to say it can only mean traitor.
Well, this is it. That's where I was going, because people have been betrayed already in this presidential election. People have been murdered. The knives have been out, and tees up perfectly.
No harm, because this is our first podcast to look at the debris of wannabes. From Mairead McGuinness, you know, it has been absolutely the kiss of death to be made favourite at some point in this. Bertie had been favourite. Mary Hannafin was
hardly a favourite now. In fairness, in the discussion,
yeah, and you had a lot of people who you know were available to stand. Then you had the sort of comedic side of it, Flatley, Conor McGregor, Bob Geldof, you know, had a call with the Taoiseach a week after he'd made a commitment to Jim. Like, that was just ill-timed. And then we had Maria Steen, and then we had Gareth Sheridan, and really it has been because the council nomination route, zilch, the Oireachtas nomination route, zilch, it has been quite unlike. Like, I remember I was in boarding school in Arran in Bray when Erskine Childers was a two-way contest with Tom Higgins, and actually remember meeting him. He came to the Church of Ireland Church in Bray and I shook hands with him and I kind of admired him. But it was a different era. Mm. So to think, you know, as politics has become more fragmented, more competitive in every respect, that we'd end up with two is quite bizarre.
It's quite remarkable. And you've ended up with two in this podcast as well. It's Sean Defoe and Ivan Yates here. This is the Calling It podcast, the presidential edition. And, you know, speaking of people being eliminated out, I'm the only host to bother coming back for a second season with you, Ivan. You knocked out Chris Donoghue, you knocked out Gavin Riley. Yes. And for some reason, is it a reflection on you or me that I'm back here?
Well, in fairness, it will never be known the work that Sean did in the 43 constituencies, something like 687 candidates to elect our 174 TDs. Yeah. Like, there was a total justification for that insofar as that nobody was able to give the time to each seat, each constituency, you know, the runners and riders, the geography, the preferences, the contenders, and then to finally call it. And not too bad, 80-90% prediction rate. I put it like this, I will on this podcast say, as we are recording this, the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party is meeting, and there's a whole other post-budget drama going on, which we'll talk about. But I think at this stage, I can sort of cut to the chase and say, it is really Catherine Connolly's to lose. I actually was not a believer at any stage that she was presidential material until now.
Mm. Well, we'll circle back to that towards the end, but I was in doing the research for this podcast. I came across nearly a month ago today, Ivan Yates, it is Jim Gavin's to lose.
Yeah.
And the drama of the last few days, the utter implosion of a campaign. Like, I don't even know where to jump off with all the different things, but the point I might take, because it's been well dissected over the last few days, did Fianna Fáil let Jim Gavin down as much as he let them down? And they let him go onto a national television debate a day after they knew that, after this tenant had approached them and said, hey, there's an issue here with Jim Gavin and it's more than just what's in the papers, I have proof. They let him go on the national television and say, I'm still looking into it, with a weak, wishy-washy answer. And had that been Billy Kelleher, had that been, frankly, and this has been said to me by government ministers, any politician with a bit of experience, they would have worked their way out of that situation. And instead, on national telly, he imploded and 8 hours later, he was gone.
Well, I was told anecdotes of friends of mine in the GAA who were in Croke Park on Saturday for the special convention to retain Jim Gavin's new rules, that he was there, his phone never stopped, and he just, and this is an observation about him, that he wasn't a political animal.
Mm.
He just didn't understand when, you know, like I remember so many times in my lifetime that, oh, this is trouble. You know what I mean? And it maybe it's an instinctive thing that you have an intuition for trouble, but to be honest with you, his radar of the extent to which a half answer wouldn't apply on the Saturday, let alone the Sunday, and, you know, when you look at the way the story was lining up, knowing that this guy was a deputy editor of the Sunday World,
yeah,
you know, he would have his facts marshalled, that media would know about this. Like, eventually, I always work on the assumption, and I train people, eventually everything gets out.
Mm.
So we may as well start with the unvarnished truth and work back from that, because, you know, I always say the cover-up is actually... People yeah. lose their job for misleading the dog. The cover-up is always worse. And so, therefore, you have to ask the question. The answer was always going to be, I've asked my solicitor to settle this matter. It is a matter, you know, I it should never have got to this, and I put my hand up to this, but I'm dealing with it. That was the answer he should yeah. have given straight away. I should have recollected this. Look, I fully accept the grievance of this man. We're now in a different circumstance, but... Of course you can say Fianna Fáil, you know, especially if some people had been told, you know, there's a story. So it wouldn't surprise me if journalists around town, and Niall Donald has said this, that journalists knew about it, and there was even discussed at the Labour Party retreat in September. If that's the case, I'm really surprised that FF didn't grab it. But like the point about it is this, it's a kind of minor thing in a way. Like, it's not like 300,000, and he can't.
That's what I mean. Like, a politician with a bit more nous about them, or but he was a deer in head. I mean, you could see he was a deer in headlights on a lot of these particular issues. And like you say, Niall Donald, he seems to have told this story to every taxi driver and journalist who would have a listen on the way. So,
had you heard it at any stage?
I hadn't heard it, no. And I was at the Labour Party thinking, now I didn't go drinking with them. That's probably where the rumour came up.
I've always advised you to go drinking.
I know, yeah, but you know, there's something
about...
It's like
a bottle of wine.
There's something about Nina in September wasn't doing it for me. But look, that's kind of where they were. The question I would put, and I have put to Jack Chambers, and we've heard it put to Micheál Martin, right? Like you say, Fianna Fáil, this was doing the rounds in certain circles at the start of September before he was ever the candidate. And it seems like they put it to Jim Gavin and took his word when he said, no, don't know anything about that. So either one or two cases, either he genuinely doesn't remember, or he misled
them. To throw him under the bus. Well, so that is a narrative from Fianna Fáil. And look, but either way, like, what's done is done.
Yeah.
But the truth of it is that, you know, when you go back through the debates and his early interviews, it really became apparent things that are more than debating points. It's just politics and understanding politics, that he wasn't a politician. And you know, I think, you know, Fianna Fáil would say that Mary McAleese wasn't a politician, but she'd actually fought an election.
Mm.
That insofar as it goes, that I think the lesson for me of this is to think that you can take someone, no matter what they've achieved in any other walk of civil life, can be transposed into it, into politics, is not an easy thing. You have to learn the ropes. And I think he was a quick learner. But the other thing is, look, let's be clear about this. Because there is no policy or power significance to this election, you know, I've always said the presidential election reveals more skeletons than is in the entirety of Glasnevin. And so therefore, like, if you, and sorry, there's 2 weeks to go. You know, there is every prospect that there may be more skeletons to come out. And like, so this is a gift in terms of that end of the sewer that keeps giving.
It keeps on giving to us. To end on Jim Gavin, I suppose, quite aside from him bowing out of the race, at what point did it click in your head that this guy is not going to win it? That this, because the potential was there on paper, and because so few, yeah, and I even felt, GAA I correspondents didn't know him.
Improve. I felt, yeah, he could improve.
And I thought he did improve. But he just didn't seem to have any aspect of personality.
Oh, I actually think on the stump, people told me that he actually had quite a lot of humility. Like, you know, when people gave out to him, he kind of took it on the chin. But and in the beginning, he didn't show much empathy, and I thought he showed more empathy as time went on. And look, he took a lot of stick. Yeah. He took a lot of stick in every direction. It, you know, the smears, the whole lot. Like, he just got it in the neck. You know, he got the whole Fianna Fáil thing in the neck. Like, I put it like this. Talk about encouraging people to go into politics at this point. But the other thing that has become a much bigger narrative, because, you know, politics moves on to the next body. And so I got a call, couple of calls on Monday of this week saying there's a heave on. And I said, oh? And so the couple of default positions I have, so first of all, anger within the, yeah, Fianna Fáil grassroots parliamentary party, those who support Billy Keller, is genuine. Is absolutely genuine and pretty hot now.
And hot as in Cork.
Oh, absolutely. Like James O'Connor, Pádraig O'Sullivan, and you'd expect there'd be Micheál, you know, in Cork. The knives were out early in play. So the word was, and this is the way I think it'll evolve, this is Jim O'Callaghan's time to stand up, put up or shut up. We will back him. We will go. We, you know, you need 10 names to put down a motion of no confidence. We will go all out for this. But if we don't have a figurehead to, you know, to change leader, it's just a shot in the dark. You've got to have a strategy. In the same way, the heave against Enda Kenny, you had to have someone like Richard Bruton to front it. You can't just say, oh, well, we'll decide what we do after that. And always my default position is, particularly if you're in government with all the ministries and you look at the situation, so they got 29 votes for Keller. How could they get to 36? This is about two things, the arithmetic, 36, and about the jobs, right? So as a lot of people have jobs to hold on. So if you want to make James O'Connor, Malcolm Byrne, or someone else a junior minister, you've got to take it off of someone else. There's no vacancies here. And so therefore, this is a straight power struggle. So the situation is Jim didn't bite. And so therefore, it is abated quite quickly. So what they'll probably do is have some sort of commission of inquiry,
yeah,
have a body.
The Fleming Commission, time to.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Something like that. That buys you time. And then something else comes along, and then they say, look, you don't hold me with the baby in the arm, we're trying to run a country here, and all this kind of thing. But for me, the lasting impact is the minute the EU presidency is over in December 26, there will be a move against him. There is no chance. Like, Micheál will have done 16 years or whatever it is at that stage, 15 years as party leader, longest serving, even getting close to Dev at this stage. So the truth of it is that that's a busted flush, and the minute the national interest allows it, because I think they want to do what Simon Harris got, which is that the next Fianna Fáil leader gets a shot at Taoiseach before he becomes tarnished in the rotation in November 27.
So you don't think he'll even be given time to become tarnished? No. It will be, you're out the door, sorry about you.
There was never a case that he was going to lead them into the next election. I don't think even Micheál believes that, but he's just going to say it.
Mm. Well, it was interesting because some of the middle of the road TDs I was speaking, the ones who aren't quite in his camp and wouldn't be the rebels, said this week they had been getting to a point where they thought, yeah, okay, if he wants to lead us in, I could see it. That's gone. That's utterly and totally gone. So if there was any ever glimmer,
that was really there.
Well, there was some of them would have been okay with it, and I don't think Micheál wants to go quietly into the night show.
The other big loser is Jack. I mean, Jack as a successor is seen as a continuity candidate of thing, and there will be regime change. No, whether it's Darragh O'Brien or whether it's Jim O'Callaghan. Look, that the vagaries of politics will play out.
That was going to be my next question, because Jim O'Callaghan has obviously been touted as a future leader for years, but has never actually really shown any interest in it. He hasn't ever done the public tour, the chicken and chip circuit. So as much as we always say, Jim O'Callaghan, future leader, does he want it?
Well, first of all, there will be sore heads who are part of the Kelleher camp are kind of saying, Jim, you've missed your opportunity. Now, from Jim's perspective, you know, if he rang me and he didn't ask my advice, I said, there's two ways this could go, if you go for it, right? One, you run and win and you become Taoiseach. That's a 2 years as Taoiseach is pretty good, right?
Yeah.
And there is a chance he could win in certain circumstances if it really becomes a crisis and people have to face up to it. So that was one. The other option is he loses, goes to the back benches. And that's what Albert Reynolds did with Pee Flynn. That actually, if you sometimes want to win the ultimate prize, which you know is going to be a year down the road, you actually become a martyr in the first instance, and therefore all the disaffected rally to your cause, and they're out there organising in the long grass and so on. So, put it like this, for Jim, it's a calculated risk for which he may have lost some sort of moxie in terms of, the other thing he'd say is, well, sure, look, this is going to fall into my lap in a year's time. You know what I mean? Why would I be arsed to have a big row about it? So it was a delicate consideration, but that consideration lapsed around Tuesday night.
Yeah. And we'll see how that plays out. Like we said, we're recording this around the time that the Fianna Fáil PP is going to start and all the fireworks and the rest of it. To draw a line under Jim Gavin, right?
The amount of calls I'm getting from junior ministers, what's really happening?
I'm telling you now.
It's quite funny. Because, you know, the way I do it is, it's all my opinion, but it's based on anonymously told.
Yeah, and sometimes not so anonymously, in fairness. We'll pick that up on next week's episode. But to draw a line under Jim Gavin, where does this rank for you in the pantheon of presidential controversies? And I'm thinking, you know, to put a few out there for you to digest, Tweetgate 2011, Sean Gallagher leading into the final week, and then the false tweet comes, totally derails, Michael D becomes president, Brian Lenehan's mature recollection, then that same election, if he had survived that, Pee Flynn as well going on and talking about Mary Robinson having this newfound love for her family and all that. Any others you want to put in, but where in that pantheon is it?
Sorry, Eddie Roach's thing was pretty difficult. I thought Gavin Duffy's court thing was pretty difficult.
David Norris and the letters.
Exactly, yeah. So I put it in two categories. Was there an impactful impact that changed the result of the election? And I think definitely Brian Lenehan's mature recollection of him having to resign from the cabinet was a game changer. It was his election to lose. He was still ahead on the first count, 7.33% transfer from the third candidate with Justin Curry. So I think really what I'm saying is, Gavin wasn't the front runner at this stage. So
you're saying probably Brian Lenehan number one.
I thought the timing of, and the unfairness of the Sean Gallagher thing, because basically, just to remind people of the story, you know, a tweet was read out on the RT television programme on the Monday night before polling to say, is it true, as per this tweet from a Sinn Féin account, that you met so-and-so, you received $5,000 in an envelope for Fianna Fáil? Fast forward 5 years, it's just untrue.
Yeah.
It wasn't on the Sinn Féin account.
And RT paid out to him.
And it wasn't true. And so therefore, he was wronged more. Look, Lenehan was partly responsible for his own downfall. However, what I do think is, you run elections, you lose elections, and you have scars. For Jim, who was an iconic figure in the life of the GAA, an iconic figure in terms of the bona fides of his CV, outstandingly successful man, I'm afraid, you know what I mean, that you know, anytime you Google Jim, this will probably come up before those things. Yeah. And I think on a personal basis and for his family, and the whole thing has actually destroyed his reputation. Like, politicians don't have a reputation like Brian Lennon, you know, to destroy, because that's what they expect, people to lie and people to, you know, not tell the truth and all that kind of thing. So basically, I would say that I don't think I've seen a case where someone's personality and personal reputation has had such a setback, leaving aside the politics of it.
So we're probably saying Brian Lennon 1, yeah. Sean Gallagher 2, yeah. Jim Gavin 3, which yeah. is yeah. tells you a lot about that. So look, that's the Jim Gavin affair. We should probably talk about the two who are actually still in the yes. election, the two left standing. And I find this fascinating because other than Micheál Martin versus Leo Varadkar in the Pat Kenny debate in 2020, we don't see head-to-heads really at all in politics anymore. Like, you might have been more familiar. I presume there yeah. was, like, you know, Michael Noonan versus Bertie. You know, it would have been Enda versus
Bertie.
Garrett
versus Charlie was the big head-to-head in my life.
Exactly.
You know.
So now, does it really manifestly change the tenor of the remaining 2 weeks that it's a head-to-head?
The difficulty in analysing this election is, so, when, you know, I always think geography is very important in elections. So I'm picturing, you're living in Bishopstown in Cork, right? You're living in Montanotti in Cork. Do you really give a damn? There's no Cork skin in the game. Even people in Wexford. People, you know. So really, there's a pocket of the West and there's a pocket of the border and Northeast who have skin in this game. And to be honest with you, it's a Friday, which is part of a holiday weekend. You know, you're into a half term. People might go off to their holiday home in Killarney or whatever, you know, from Dublin on a Friday. As you know, we're working from home. All the snowflakes and Gen Z don't work on a Friday anymore. The whole thing is a joke. So therefore, I would say we were looking ordinarily at a low poll. Then you're looking at, you know, the kind of disillusionment. Fianna Fáil people mightn't go vote. Sinn Féin people who wanted their own candidate mightn't be, you know, completely on board. So the situation is that, like, I think it will be, to get 43%, that was the turnout the last time, would be good. Now,
wow.
When you get, like, could be very bad. It could be 35%.
Yeah, because the last time was particularly bad, but everyone knew Michael D was going to win. And right. He had the same kind of problems that no one really
and
cared.
This isn't a slam dunk. So therefore that does keep a some interest in it. I would say the difficulty has been, when it comes to two-horse race, it's not the personality, it's the narrative. And the narrative that has prevailed is, the government sort of sucks. The government won the local elections, Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil, and they won the general election. And you know what? If they get a bit of a black eye from this, it's not the end of the world. I think that is the narrative more than the personality of any of the candidates that is right now prevailing. And then you have other specific issues. How do you feel about international affairs, right? And I think, you know, so if you're asking me, okay, so Fine Gael ring me and say, how do we reverse this, right? You're going to be shocked about this now, right? I will go bullheaded. Do you want a Provo in the park? Is she a Russian asset? I would smear the bejesus out of her simply because you have nothing to lose. Like, the truth of it is, Heather is actually, the 10 years of being in government and your great minister and your great CV is actually an albatross around her neck, because everything that you're unhappy with in the legacy of government, housing, blah, 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 you know, child poverty and so on, is hung around her. And I just noticed in the media's pursual of the second and third question on the same topic, they tend not to blame Catherine for anything, even her views. And she's got a bit of a Teflon thing. You know, she hasn't been in government. Whereas I find even today and yesterday that, you know, when I see Heather getting, you know, caught up in the barbed wire that is transgenderism, I'm saying, right. In other words, like, that is almost, whoever gets in that answering that question is in trouble,
yes.
Right?
Because there's no good, there's no win to that question.
And there's just divisive thing. But who get, like, both candidates won't get caught up in that. And I have to say that Catherine Connolly's social media campaign, I have to say her postering campaign.
The kicky-uppies was like, you know, that's just social media gold.
Absolutely, absolutely. And And so therefore, there's been, you know, and it always is the case that success has a lot of parents. There's someone will come out and say, well, I ran the social media campaign and I ran this, I ran the postering campaign.
Yeah.
And
but
so
you know what?
I have her to, smarts have been better.
They have been there. But and you know what? And to give them their due, that has been since Sinn Féin came on board.
Okay.
Because before that, it was largely people before profit. It wasn't well organised. She was having little run-ins with the media. And I was very sceptical of the whole Sinn Féin backing her. It's a game-changer thing. I didn't really buy into that. Yeah. But I do have to say there has been a noticeable I don't know whether they put people on her team, whether they're advising, but it has noticeably improved since then. So you would go full guns out. Is Heather Humphreys, you know, Auntie Heather, the kind of person who can do that?
Well, put it like this. I spoke to a strategist that I respect, and I think campaigning as usual for Auntie Heather is not going to cut it. And so therefore, you've got to create a fear that Ireland's international reputation could be endangered by this person in the park. I'm not saying that's true, but I'm just saying that's like, if that's the narrative you've got to put out there. Now, look, campaigning is about risk, but in my experience, nothing works like negative campaigning.
I suspect something like that will be needed, because I just don't know what the fire is for Heather. And I thought she was a lot better in the second debate.
Yeah.
A bit more fire.
More
but
energy,
now,
yeah.
she's more energy,
yeah.
which
wouldn't have been hard.
Wouldn't have been hard.
Like she looked as if, you know, do I really want to spend 7 years in the Auris when Eric's not there? You know, that's what I picked up from
Well, she was kind of, it struck like me her, like,
Eric is not going to lead the Suckler Cow. Let's be clear about this. And would you blame him?
Well, this is it. It's a nice house now, in fairness,
right,
of the park.
Rattling around in that.
Probably
the heating is lousy.
I'm sure you'd be allowed to graze them, would you? You know, move across some
sheep,
of those deer.
Sheep only.
You'd know. So look, that is where it stands at the moment. Advantage, Catherine Connolly. I tend to agree with you. I think at the moment, nothing is sticking to her. Her answers, even if you don't agree with her, she has a way of answering questions that seems authentic.
Yeah.
You're like, well, that's her real view, and that's okay.
And look, the truth is, Fianna Fáil are going to sit this one out. They've sat out the last two in circumstance they wouldn't want. So the question is, will Fine Gael go for a high-risk negative campaign? Which will draw ire in the other direction. But to just do conventional duelling is just not going to work. And I think there is the germ with her remarks on Germany in particular. Like, I actually, Hamas in government, okay, yeah, that was as clumsy as Jim's military objective, you know. It was just clumsy wording, because the next day the PLO were in, you know, the United Nations where you were, and saying, look, well, you know, the Hamas won't be part of a government.
Yeah.
So, like, she was exposing that. But the German thing I just found off the Richter scale, you know, comparing Germany now to 1933, when the Nuremberg laws were introduced, when they had 47% of their economy and military. You're like, you know, Merz is being dragged screaming and kicking because of the Nord Stream, you know, policy with Angela Merkel of Russian energy, and they have to fight Putin with Trump saying day-day. So, like, to compare that, and if she actually believes that, that would be worrying. And I've been, you know, council ministers, we are begging and scraping always for France and Germany to give us a dig out, whether it's Mercosur or something else, you know what I mean? So if you can exaggerate that, campaign on that, and say, look, is this like this the most important thing the president has to do? Because the Council of State advises them on legislation, is the diplomatic role. Is she a diplomat? You know, but put it like this, I actually think with the budget and that Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil took a decision. Okay, we're gonna suffer a lot of unpopularity, won't help the presidential campaign. Life goes on. You know, in other words, how big a priority is this in the larger scale of things for Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil? Like, Harris had loved to say, we got the first Fine Gael president ever, but he has an alibi to say, look, we got. So I'm looking at 53-47 at the moment, and he'd say 47% was good, you know.
Yeah.
So, like, I'm not detecting that there is a knockout desire in Fine Gael, really. They'd love to win, but
but is it the most important thing in the world? Maybe not.
And will they go to all out?
To yeah. get it. The funniest outcome, of course, would be that Jim Gavin still wins, because you will be able to vote for Jim Gavin on the yeah. day. It won't happen, of course, but it would be fantastically interesting if it was close and he had, I don't know, 50,000 odd transfers.
No, but his number two is then, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that would be the interesting.
It won't be a spoiled vote if that happens.
Exactly. It would be an actual vote. As much as people might want to spoil.
And two, Connolly, and three, Heather. But like, the point is, my understanding of it is that there would just be one count, and you know, there may be quite a lot of spoil, so you'll have a valid poll. And just on that, just to give you the figures, the register is not quite fine, about 3.6 million. Mm. So 40% gives you 1.7 million of a turnout. And so basically, I'm looking at a quota somewhere around 700,000. Okay. But you could be elected without reaching the quota.
Yeah, and probably will. It'll probably be two counts, but the first count will really tell us. By the time we speak next for the second episode of Calling It, we will have had two more radio debates, one of those being here on News Talk on the Pat Kenny Show the morning of the 14th, where I have been reliably told the two candidates will be standing up for a change, because I hate all this sitting down nonsense. Yeah, you don't get the energy, you know? Yeah. So there we go. We will know then.
One of them should get Maria Steen's handbag and give the other a good belt, and they'll have the photo op of the campaign.
That would be the first question. Do you own an Hermes bag? And if not, what is the most expensive handbag you own?
Or would you like to?
Well, they'd all like to. That's been Calling It, the presidential election, with myself, Sean Defoe, and Ivan Yates, produced by Trish Laverty and Aoife Breen, and researched by Micheál O'Connell. We are going to be back next Thursday with the latest on the campaign trail, the fallout from the Fianna Fáil PP, those two debates, as I mentioned. Don't forget to subscribe on the Go Loud app or wherever it is you get your podcast to keep track of developments ahead of polling day on October 24th. Rather, which is coming in hot and fast.
Most people don't know how many financial accounts they have or their net worth. And when you're not paying attention, you're leaving money on the table. The solution is Monarch, an all-in-one personal finance tool that brings your entire financial life together in one clean interface on your laptop or phone. In just minutes, link all your accounts for a complete picture of your financial health. You'll never need a spreadsheet again. Get 50% off your first year at monarch.com with code WEALTH. That's monarch.com, promo code WEALTH.